Morning, we unsealed an indictment in the Southern District of New York of Konstantin Kalashnikov and Elena Afanasyeva, two Russian-based employees of RT, a Russian state-controlled media outlet. They are charged with conspiring to commit money laundering and to violate the Foreign Agents Registration Act. That law, enacted nearly a century ago, was enacted to ensure that the American people were informed when a foreign power engages in political activities or seeks to influence public discourse. The American people are entitled to know when a foreign power is attempting to exploit our country's free exchange of ideas in order to send around its own propaganda. And that is what we alleged happened in this case. In the wake of Russia's brutal invasion of Ukraine in February 2022, RT, which was then known as Russia Today, was dropped by its American distributors. The company ceased its formal operations in the United States, and the European Union, the UK, and Canada banned RT's broadcasting.
Well, that was your Attorney General, Merrick Garland. And I know it's a familiar refrain. The Russians are controlling our elections. Just in time for the 2024 election. Here we go. Sandy Rios with you. The reason I'm laughing is because if you listen to that whole conference, truly, they just seem like they can't come up with anything new. The Russians, of course, are always trying to influence our elections. We send our CIA overseas to interfere with other countries' elections, to elect the people that we think should be elected. Used to be people that were not communists, but not so much anymore. I'm not saying that's right, but I'm saying this happens. Well, this is a playbook that they've tried for the last two elections, 2016 and 2020. And this time, it's that the grail is so thin on it. RT, even as he's reading the indictment, using, you know, Putin's brutal invasion of Ukraine. What he's trying to make people think, he's trying to remind you how horrible Russia is, how horrible Putin is, how awful the situation in Ukraine. And that's all true. But it has nothing to do with this indictment. It's a mind game, and here they go again. Well, can the Justice Department control or interfere themselves in an election, the one that's coming up, the presidential election? And if they can, is there anything we can do about it? We have a really fascinating show today because Jeff Clark, who's a former assistant attorney general and attorney general for a time when President Trump was president, who you may remember was apprehended on his driveway in his underwear, not by the FBI, but by federal agents. And they invaded his house. They humiliated him because he wanted to investigate what happened in 2020. It's as simple as that. And that's coming from the Justice Department. And so he joins us today to kind of reflect on that. There's a movie coming out next week. It's called The Jeff Clark Story.com, which will tell the whole story. It's coming out on September the 16th. Jeff will join us in just a few minutes to tell that story and also to talk about what's happening in the Justice Department now. Let me remind you that abortion has remained the world's leading cause of death for the fifth consecutive year in 2023, despite the overturn of Roe v. Wade. Tragically, this total is greater than the number of deaths attributed to the next seven causes of death combined. And sadly, with the abortion pill accounting for over 60% of all abortions, babies' lives are at an even greater risk now. And that's why the need for preborn. Preborn reaches the moms to show them their babies inside the womb via these ultrasounds. They reach them not only to save the life of the baby, but also save the heart and meant sometimes the life of the mother herself. If you would like to help, go to preborn.com/Sandy. That's preborn.com/Sandy and make your most generous donation. You know you can call us at 662-821-2040. You can write us at sandy@afr.net. You can find us on Facebook or Twitter or Instagram, Truth Social. You can find us on YouTube also. Sometimes we do things on camera. You can go to AFR.net and listen to the podcast. That is Home Base American Family Radio. You can go to sandyrios.com and find it, or you can go to any podcast platform. All right, well, you're in for a treat. So sit back and relax and enjoy today's edition of Sandy Rios 24/7.
From American Family Radio, Sandy Rios.
We are not called to be nice. We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
I think the most important thing we need to demonstrate to our children is genuineness. That we actually believe what we say we believe.
A longtime Fox News contributor, Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
Seek justice, not social justice, but God's justice, what's right and what's wrong.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association,
a pro-life radio talk show host.
We've got to say this is the line. Life is sacred.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
Jeff Clark is being attacked because he's so strong and so good.
They are destroying and have destroyed the rule of law in America, and they were using our judicial system in order to prosecute and persecute President Trump and anyone who supported him.
The punishment and the pain that has been inflicted on him in his life is so important to the regime because they want to set a deterrent.
If President Trump had sailed off into the sunset, none of this would have happened.
But his key ally in this is this guy, Jeffrey Clark, but who is effectively plotting a coup with the president.
What was his only qualification? That he would do whatever the president wanted him to do.
Jeffrey Clark, who was fully committed to corrupting the DOJ on Trump's behalf.
When they raid your house, they take all your electronics, and they're parking black vans outside your house, and they're following you sometimes, and you know your communications are being monitored, you know, it can tend to have an impact on you. I think they expected me to cave, but I couldn't. I won't, and I will never.
All right, Sandy Rios with you on Sandy Rios 24/7. That's the trailer to a new movie that's coming out. It's coming out September the 16th. It's called The Jeff Clark Story. And I have to tell you, I have been wanting to interview Jeff Clark for months. Our paths crossed at an event in D.C. not long ago, and we had a chance to chat, and I admired him from afar, but I hadn't had a chance to talk to him. And I love the heroes that my life intersects with, and he's one of them. So Jeff, by the way, was a former United States Assistant Attorney General. He now is a Center for Renewing America senior fellow. He's an attorney, but here's the deal: the story is about how he ran afoul of the powers that be in Washington, D.C. in the last few months of Donald Trump's presidency, especially over the 2020 election. And the story really is jaw-dropping, and we're not going to tell all the story today because you need to watch the movie. It's the JeffClarkStory.com, which will come out again on September the 16th. But we're going to get a bit of it from him if he will allow. Jeff, thank you for joining us today. I appreciate it so much.
Well, I'm glad to be here, Sandy, and it's good to hear your voice again after we met at CPAC.
Yeah, that was great. That was just great. Well, all right. So I think if I try to identify who you are to people, I know a lot of people know who you are, but maybe people around the country don't. You were last seen, at least on television, well, except being a guest, a pundit, standing in your underwear in your driveway as the FBI was raiding your home. I'll never forget that. I'm sure you'll never forget that. And just if we could, in a word, talk about, I want to ask you this. Were you the only assistant attorney general or attorney general in the Justice Department after the 2020 election who really wanted to get to the bottom of, look at the evidence, and find out what had actually happened? Were you the only one?
The short answer is yes. And the more complicated answer is that former Attorney General Bill Barr had issued a memo a few days after the election on November 9th of 2020, and he said that several officials of the Justice Department were being green-lighted to investigate election irregularities. But later information came out that Attorney General Barr was squashing various investigations that different individuals wanted to undertake. And then also he admitted to the White House liaison, so that's an official that works for the White House, that And there's an equivalent spot at every cabinet agency, you know, all the major agencies, because the president obviously is the one who picks personnel. So that liaison sits in the relevant department, but works for the White House and then helps, you know, place people inside those departments as political officials. She inquired, you know, her name is Heidi Stirrup. She inquired of Barr what was going on about the election, and they told her about the memo. But when she probed them, they basically admitted that they weren't doing anything using the memo. So, yeah, the short answer to the question is I was the only high-ranking official who wanted to do anything. Now, there were a couple of U.S. attorneys who wanted to do something, namely Bill McSwain in Philadelphia, the Eastern District of Pennsylvania U.S. attorney. He wanted to investigate fraud. Barr shut him down. And then Larry Keefe, who was a U.S. attorney in Florida and a former law partner of Matt Gaetz, wanted to investigate election shenanigans down there by Andrew Gillum. And Barr also shut that down.
I don't know if you can answer this or if you even wanted to answer it. But, you know, William Barr was so convincing. I have to tell you, I was a skeptic when he was chosen. And I was a skeptic because at the hearing, he had like, oh, I'm exaggerating, but the whole front row was filled with family members. And he introduced each of them, and they all worked for the government. And to me, that was a red flag. Because you can't work in that town without owing people. You can't be, you and I both know, you cannot... You cannot really speak the truth and hold fast. You have to do a lot of compromising to find yourself on a long track in D.C. And so I was very suspicious. But then he gets in, and he actually said some wonderful things. And I was convinced. I was convinced that he was an honest broker. And so when, to finish your story, at least that part of it, after he's acting like he's ordering people in the Justice Department to look into the election malfeasance, he comes out with a statement, as you well know, that he looked into it and there was no credibility to any of the claims. Basically, that's what he said. So I'm going to ask you, is William Barr, has he always been duplicitous like that, or was that something that surprised you also?
Well, I know that the life issue is very important to you, Sandy, so let me tell you that I was more than skeptical, but I was also hopeful, and I saw some of the statements I think you're talking about. I saw him give a particularly impressive address to the law school at Notre Dame, and I sent him, you know, congratulations and kudos on that. And I thought that maybe he had changed from the story I'm about to tell you, you know, basically sort of fearing for his grandchildren and where the country was headed if we didn't turn it around. But by the end, I was, you know, convinced that my fears had been correct. And so here's that story, and I'm not letting this story out of the bag because, A, I didn't serve in the Bush 41 administration at the Justice Department. That's before my time. The other thing is that it has been publicly released by several sources. I was, you know, told it by one of the key participants who I will not name out of respect to him, who has since died, but it has been published. It's been published in, you know, Reason Magazine by a law professor who actually had been a summer associate of mine, Jonathan Adler. And the story is this. Basically, Boyd and Gray, the former White House counsel, had lined up Ken Starr to be the next Supreme Court justice for the suit that David Souter ultimately wound up getting. And Barr and Luttig and some others basically did the same thing that was done to me, you know, a week or two after Barr left the department, which was in 2020, which was to formulate a resignation pact. If we don't get our way on this issue, we will make things very difficult for you, President Bush. We will resign noisily, and that will leave you with a big mess. And so that caused Bush 41 to drop his pre-agreement to put Ken Starr in the Supreme Court and instead to put David Souter on the court. And the result of that is we got the Casey decision, which enshrined for another 20 years the Roe precedent.
Wow. So to be specific, they did not want Ken Starr. And Barr, that was Barr. They wanted to stop Ken Starr from being a justice.
Yes. And I think that Ken would have voted with the conservatives to overturn or at least modify Roe in significant ways back, you know, in the 1990s. You know, I don't think anyone can fully prove that, right? But That is my strong surmise. And certainly anyone who looked at David Souter and his kind of, you know, record of living at home with his mom and his kind of squishy New Hampshire Supreme Court decisions would have reason to be very skeptical of that guy and to think that there's no way he would ever be as muscular as a Ken Starr, who in full disclosure, was one of my mentors at my former private law firm, Kirkland & Ellis.
Yeah, he's a great man. I used to go to McLean Bible Church and often sit next to Ken Starr and sing hymns in worship. So that's how I know him. He's not a personal friend, but just as an aside. Oh, well, all right. Okay, let's go back to your role, your dastardly role in all of this, because you were charged with a lot of things. But what exactly was it that you wanted to do in regard to the election, Jeff? What did you want to do? The 2020 election.
Maybe the first thing to understand, Sandy, just so I can put some parameters around it, is that President Trump has instructed me twice now through his lawyers to invoke executive privilege, law enforcement privilege, deliberative process privilege, and attorney-client privilege over what he said to me, over what I said to him. So what I can do, though, is talk about things that happened that were improper and put things into the public record that never should have been put there, especially as confirmed by the Trump v. U.S. immunity decision that came out on July 1st. So what got released, first via anonymous leak from lawyers, and there was a kind of showdown meeting at the White House's Oval Office on January 3rd of 2021, so very early in that new year, right after the election. And lawyers from that leaked to the New York Times that there had been a showdown, a confrontation, about whether to send a letter to Georgia that the New York Times said that I drafted. And the letter, just to, so you understand, is very modest. The letter had said, one of your own Senate subcommittees run by a state senator, Georgia Senator Ligon, had found that there were significant irregularities and fraud potentially in the Fulton County election, especially in Georgia, but in other parts of the state as well. And they recommended further investigation. And so the letter that, I worked on said that to the Georgia Speaker of the House, the Georgia President of the Senate, with a copy to Governor Kemp, you should further investigate this as well, and you should call yourselves into special session to do that investigation. That's it. It recommended that an independent state body that the federal government did not control do its own investigation and look further into the election. That's it. That is what has gotten me in the soup. And it's the lawyers who anonymously leaked that letter, which never should have been put in the public because the letter was never sent, that has gotten me in the soup.
Well, let me just say that you ended up becoming an unindicted co-conspirator in the federal prosecution of Donald Trump over attempts to overturn the 2020 election. So that's how they labeled it. And at some point, you know, I mentioned in our opening part about the FBI visit, and people, certainly people that are aware and listen to my show will remember that. And the thing I want to ask you, I don't understand. The FBI is part of the Justice Department. My husband is a retired FBI agent. When it comes to authority, does an FBI agent have authority over an assistant attorney general in the Justice Department?
Well, the answer to your direct question is yes. I mean, if anyone is breaking the law, the FBI has the authority to look into that. But just a quick correction, it's actually not the FBI that invaded, or raided my house. It was agents of the Inspector General's office at the Justice Department, so a different component of the Justice Department.
I didn't know that.
And they were accompanied by Fairfax County Police, which, you know, I think they specifically sent there because I don't think the IG's office and their people have body cams. So the footage that you referred to at the start, which, you know, makes me angry to this day, is the result of the Fairfax police detectives, you know, being put there as well. And so now there is a very serious question about whether the Inspector General has authority over former Department of Justice officials. So let's say, there's an official I'll just throw it in because it seems more potentially tied to facts. You know, there was some affiliate of the Biden administration or something who was taking bribes from China. And that official is still in office at the Justice Department, then the Inspector General would investigate that and would have full authority. But, you know, by the time they raided my house, that was June of 2022, and I had been out of office for about 18 months.
Well, of course, part of that, we know now the modus operandi behind the left is to embarrass and intimidate and humiliate. Like Saul Alinsky comes to mind, target, you know, your opposition and humiliate. And they did that. I mean, that was horrible. Of a man of your character and stature, it was terrible what they did. And but you didn't stop. And I want to ask you, because you then, and this is more recent, had to come up before the you had left the Justice Department. You're working now at the Center for Renewing America. You're a senior fellow there, so, and doing other things, I'm sure. But in the interim, you've had your law license come into play in the District of Columbia, correct?
That's correct. So that saga was under seal for about 6-7 months, actually more like 9 months. So what happened, you know, just to tell you a quick sequential story, right? So I leave office on January 14th of 2021. I resigned a little bit early to let my principal deputy take over and become acting assistant attorney general of one of the two of seven litigating divisions at the Justice Department that I ran. And then 8 days later, 2 days after Joe Biden's inauguration, that's when the New York Times dropped this anonymously sourced hit piece on me. That led to the House Oversight Committee under Carolyn Maloney coming after me. Then it led to the Senate Judiciary Committee under Senator Durbin in a tied Senate 50-50 coming after me, and then ultimately the January 6th Committee. So the Senator Durbin is the one who created the problems for me with the bar, but he did that after I had declined to comply with a subpoena from the January 6th Committee, just in conjunction with that. And then the D.C. bar decided to open an investigation after Senator Durbin put out a report attacking me and after he had referred me to the bar. And so the bar then subpoenaed, you know, precisely the same documents from me that the January 6th Committee sought, in which I, you know, gave them the same battery of privileges I rattled off for you earlier, executive privilege, law enforcement privilege, et cetera. And they would not, take that for an answer. And so they went under seal to the D.C. Court of Appeals. That's the highest local home rule court. And they asked to have that subpoena enforced. And they fought about that. We fought about it. It was fully briefed, by about end of March of 2020. And then finally, the court didn't seem to be moving on it, and the Office of Disciplinary Counsel in D.C. got impatient, and so they filed public charges against me in July of 2022. And maybe the other thing to understand, so that you can see how all of these gloves of the hands of the Democratic Party are working together, my house was raided, on a particular day in June of 2022, and the very next day, the January 6th committee held a hearing that was exclusively directed to attacking me, and nobody's going to tell me that that was a coincidence. And then there was like a recap hearing of the greatest hits of the January 6th assault on President Trump and those, adjacent to him in terms of lawfare, and the bar complaint dropped against me publicly right before the January 6th recap hearing. So
wow.
The January 6th committee, I believe Jack Smith, you referred to him naming me as unindicted co-conspirator number 4 originally with President Trump in his D.C. indictment. And the bar, I believe that they had all strategized together. Also later, when I became a defendant alongside President Trump in Fannie Willis's Georgia Fulton County action against me, there's also evidence that she was coordinating with both the White House counsel for Biden and with the January 6th committee. So it's all kind of a cabal, and they're all fomenting this lawfare against President Trump and anyone who they're trying to intimidate around President Trump so they can get at him.
Yes, all of that. And so certainly I think people are beginning to understand, Jeff, before, you know, this kind of put a taint on President Trump, put a taint on you. They love to put taints on people and embarrass and ridicule them and ruin their lives, really. They're really happy to do that. But it's amazing to see. I think John Eastman's become a friend, and we've covered his case closely. And he's like a happy warrior. He just will not recant, as it were, like Martin Luther. You know, I can do no more. I have to stand on what's true. And that you've done this very same thing. And President Trump, the same way. In fact, let me stop just a second to play this clip that I think is remarkable. This is a statement, morphing to President Trump for a second, on President Trump and his observation about his legal problems. This is clip one.
Enthusiasm and the love that we have now, this has really been incredible. And if I didn't think we did well last time, I wouldn't have done this, because, you know, it's a little tough life. It's not the easiest. You get shot at, other things happen, other routine events happen. But we're going to do it for one reason. I wouldn't have changed. They asked me just a little while ago, a reporter said, "Sir, if you had to do it again, would you do it again?" I said, "Absolutely, because we're going to make America great again. And that's better than my life." Right? These guys know. We know.
Well, I think that's profound. And I guess, Jeff, the question would be to you, too. I mean, we didn't tell your whole story here because the movie's coming out. Let me say again, it's the JeffClarkStory.com. It's coming out September 16th. Would you take the stand you did on the election if you knew what your family's gone through and what you've gone through?
I would. I think that, just to speak for my wife briefly, I don't think she understood how long it was going to go on, right?
Yeah.
It's still not over. It's still almost 4 years later, and they're still coming after me hammer and tongs. Jack Smith dropped his reference to me after the Supreme Court immunity decision basically said that President Trump has a constitutional right and duty under the Take Care Clause of the Constitution to consult with the Justice Department. And so that even caused Jack Smith to pull me out of the indictment. So now I've been trying to convince the D.C. bar to drop the charges against me as well, because I believe that, you know, for the same reason that Jack Smith dropped me out of the indictment, they shouldn't be pursuing me under the bar. But, you know, to answer for myself, right? And you know, the kids, I think, are at a level of remove because they're older for me. And they're still, you know, like very much, you know, in my camp, and they don't experience the hardships in the same way. I think that I would definitely do the same thing, because not only is it ridiculous that I'm being accused of unethical conduct by suggesting the very modest course of further investigations by the Georgia legislature into the propriety of how the 2020 election was held. I mean, you can't get more modest advice than that, and they're still trying to pillory me for it. But it's worse than that, because if you are a Senate-confirmed official, high-ranking at the Justice Department, and the president turns to you and he asks you for your legal advice, it is your duty to give him the best legal advice you can. And it's not just a duty that you have constitutionally, and that's the most important duty, because I took an oath under Article 6 of the Constitution to the Constitution of the U.S. That's my preeminent duty. But I also have, you know, a general duty as a lawyer, and that duty as a lawyer requires me to give my best advice when asked for it, even if other people disagree with me, and to zealously represent my client. And with the D.C. bar, they even pressed me on that point. Maintain that, you know, my client was the Justice Department. And my view is, no, the chief law enforcer of the United States is the President of the United States under Article 2. It is one person. As the Supreme Court says in the Trump v. U.S. decision, there's only one branch of government that is one person, the President of the United States, and that is the executive branch. And so, you know, I had a duty, and my duties as a lawyer ran to him as a client, not in his campaign capacity, not in his individual capacity, but in his official capacity as the President of the United States. I owe confidentiality to him, and I owe the best possible advice. And so it's the ultimate irony to essentially be being prosecuted by the D.C. bar for adhering to my duty, when it's other lawyers who breached the confidences, went to the New York Times anonymously, and told tales to try to destroy me because they were fearful of what would happen if I had, you know, solidified power under President Trump's calling on me. And it's not been widely reported, but I can, you know, remind you, Sandy, that actually for a period of about 9 hours on January 3rd, 2021, and the January 6th committee figured this out, I actually was the acting Attorney General of the United States. What is it that caused a change in that? It was pulling one of these resignation packs, exactly like Bill Barr pulled to stop Ken Starr from going on the Supreme Court.
Hi, this is Sandy Rios. A lot of Christians would be shocked to learn they are personally profiting from abortion and pornography. It's unnerving to realize just how many companies and corporations are actively involved in unbiblical practices. To help cut through the red tape, there is a great option known as Timothy Plan. Timothy Plan is the pioneer in biblically responsible investing. Timothy Plan carefully filters out companies involved in practices Scripture tells us to avoid. We are in an all-out culture war. One powerful way to make a difference is to put our money where our values are. Please go to timothyplan.com/Sandy. That's timothyplan.com/Sandy. Or call 1-800-TIM-PLAN. That's 1-800-846-7526. Discover how to be a biblically responsible investor.
Before investing, carefully consider the fund's investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses of the investment company. This and other important information can be found in the fund's prospectus. To obtain a copy, visit timothyplan.com or call 800-846-7526. Read each prospectus carefully before investing.
This is Sandy Rios 24/7 on American Family Radio.
Some of you are, you know, you have more finances than others. We're not all the same. Some of you are struggling, but others of you still have good resources. And if you have those kinds of resources, would you consider a leadership gift to save babies in a big way? Your tax-deductible donation of $5,000 will sponsor Preborn's entire network for 24 hours, and that would reach 200 babies and their moms. To donate, just go to preborn.com/Sandy, that's preborn.com/Sandy.
By exercising the First Amendment and in using the power of film, and just in time before the election, we are bringing you 12 amazing documentaries, which together tell the most powerful and complete story ever told. Prepare yourselves for the most educational, entertaining, and emotional live stream event of the year, all for only $25. Don't miss this. Everyone enjoys movies, so invite your friends and neighbors over for a live stream watch party. Go to 1afilmfest.com for your live stream ticket. Help us and spread the word and educate America. That's 1afilmfest.com. 1afilmfest.com.
The Sandy Rios 24/7 podcast are available at AFR.net. Back to Sandy Rios 24/7 on American Family Radio.
In a separate enforcement action, the Justice Department is seizing 32 internet domains that the Russian government and the Russian-sponsored actors have used to engage in a covert campaign to interfere and influence the outcome of our country's elections. As alleged in our court filings, President Vladimir Putin's inner circle, including Sergei Kirinikov, directed Russian public relations companies to promote disinformation and state-sponsored narratives as part of a program to influence the 2024 U.S. presidential election. An internal planning document created by the Kremlin states that as a goal of the campaign is securing Russia's preferred outcome in the election.
There was a movie back in the 60s. It's called The Russians Are Coming. The Russians are coming. The Russians are coming. So according to the Justice Department, the Russians are coming again. And I wish maybe Merrick Garland should write his own statement so he'd know how to pronounce Sergei. Is that what he said?
Sergei.
Anyway, make sure you trust his, you know, his profound statement. Honey, my husband, Bruce, former FBI agent, former Cook County prosecutor. What did you think about that? Just your thoughts. You just listen to Jeff. That was fascinating, wasn't it? I thought it was really great.
You know, I have to tell you, Jeff, to me, is a hero. And I don't like to use that term loosely, but he stood up against his entire department. His whole life of work was there to be lost, and he was willing to lose it, just the way President Trump did. Whereas you compare that to a Bill Barr. Bill Barr, I was on board with him when he first came. I thought, okay, let's clean things up. This is the guy to do it. And you have seen through a series of things, especially what Jeff talked about today, Bill Barr has let us down at every turn. He has failed to clean up anything, and I think what he was doing was saving himself, because he must have
and
gotten
his children and his all children. Their jobs in the federal government.
Because when you put out a memo saying we're going to investigate people and, you know, we're going to take care of this, and then your own watchdog agency has to ferret out of you that, well, we're really not doing that. That says all you need to know, I think, about Bill Barr. And he has tried to rehabilitate himself several times since he's been found out to be a fraud. And every time he tries to do it, more evidence comes up that he really was a turncoat.
It's really amazing to me. You know, and he just played the game, you know, the bagpipes, and he said so many fine things. But I think we have to get used to the fact that there are so many duplicitous people. And it takes it in D.C. for sure. You have to see what a person does, not what they say. I say that all the time. I say that about President Trump. He says a lot of things. I actually think he's improving on this, but people complain about his impolitic, the things he says and the names and all the things that he does. But look at what he does. And over a period of time, I was thinking we're going to get more into President Trump's legal hassles. And tomorrow, Jeff's going to join us for a second day. Okay, honey, any last thoughts about Jeff Clark today? I want to remind people that movie is coming out. It is the JeffClarkStory.com. It's coming out on September the 16th. And I can't wait to see that, really, because there's a lot more to the story than we got to.
Well, again, I want to reiterate that I think Jeff is a hero for what he did. In D.C., when you work for these agencies, and I can speak from personal experience, you start to experience a syndrome called the golden handcuff. And what that means is you have been employed by the government just long enough where now you've got a pension on the line, you've got a career on the line, you're at an age where if you leave the government or you try to buck the system and they fire you, you're going to be in a world of hurt because you cannot reestablish yourself at that point often in time. And Jeff knew this. Listen, he's been around long enough. He knew if I side with President Trump, if we lose, I'm going to be in a world of hurt. And he did it anyway.
Amazing. Amazing. And so enjoyable. Okay, so that's the end of today's show, and I appreciate you listening. I want to thank our sponsors. By the way, Timothy Plan is where you put your money where your values are and discover how to be a biblically responsible investor. Visit timothyplan.com/Sandy. That's timothyplan.com/Sandy, or call 1-800-TIM-PLAN. Well, all right, you've been listening to Sandy Rios 24/7. You can listen to us on any podcast platform. You can go to sandyrios.com and listen. You can call us at 662-821-2040. You can write us at sandy@afr.net. So thank you so much for listening to today's edition of Sandy Rios 24/7.